conference work. I'm really grateful to you. I know that Bernard Hazel and Dick are as well. I know years and years ago, in fact, it was after my first visit to Thailand, I went home and my job in a conference was washing up. And by the time that we had finished the conference, the guy that was in charge of the conference came to me. He said, "Charles, I'm just so thankful to you and so blessed. Your attitude in washing up was so great," and he gave me a lovely shirt. God appreciates these things. He really does, and I know I've been blessed by it. And the reason I've been blessed is the way the conference has gone on. It has been fantastic the way God has just moved, and through everybody, whether it was leading the worship in whatever form, but we got there, and the prayer and the ministry, it has been absolutely thrilling. Last night was the highlight for me. I know God like that. I know him as Father. I know what it is to be forgiven and how to forgive. I know these things. But when our brother expanded it to us, it was thrilling. And I'm grateful to him because I will use the terminology, the words, the vehicle in my life and ministry and home from now on. Let us open in John 4. John 4, I'm going to read it and then make some comments on it. Quite consistent with the prophecy we've heard, or one of them, and two of the songs that were sung. Verse four, chapter 4, verse 4. He, Jesus, had to pass through Samaria, and he came into a city of Samaria called Sychar, near the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, was sitting thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. There came a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman therefore said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask me a drink, since I am a Samaritan woman?" For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Jesus answered and said to her, "Oh, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is that says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." She said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? You are not greater than our father Jacob, are you? Who gave us the well and drank of it himself and his sons and his cattle." Jesus answered and said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water shall thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall become in him a well of water springing up unto eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water, so I will not be thirsty, nor come all the way here to draw." And he said to her, "Go, call your husband and come here." The woman answered and said, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You have well said, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. This you have said truly." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, but you people, the Jews, say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem shall you worship the Father. You worship that which you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshippers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming. He was called Christ. When that one comes, he will declare all things to us." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." And at this point, his disciples came back and marveled that he had been speaking with a woman. Yet no one said to him, what do you seek? Or no one said, what do you seek? Or why do you speak with her? So the woman left her water pot and went into the city and said to the men, "Come see a man. Come see a man who told me all the things that I have done. This is not the Christ, is it?" Back to verse 4. And he had to pass through Samaria. He had to do it. You see, this woman had a reputation in the town. But way back in ages past, she was in Father's heart. Before she was conceived, in love or out of love, in wedlock or out of wedlock, she was in the heart of God from ages past. The Ancient of Days knew her and loved her. And when she was conceived, he was there. It was in his will that she was conceived. And when she was born, this is what happened. Now, I want you to use your imaginations. This is what happens. She was in a little village in Samaria. The midwife was there. And the midwife took the baby, her, out of her mother's womb. Who was there in the room? Father was there in the spirit. Jesus was there. And when Jesus saw her coming out and being born, he was beside himself with excitement. He looked at Father and said, "This is what we've waited for. All of these times, all of the ages past, we waited for her." And they were excited. And they were full of joy. And Jesus takes this little baby in the spirit. Use your imagination. It has helped me a lot in my spiritual walk. He takes this child, loves her. He never loved her more. He'll never love her less. And he hands her to Father with great joy and the exchange, the joy of the moment. He had to go to Samaria. Jesus had to go to Samaria. He had waited for this her whole life. He had to come to Genting. He had to. Now, twice yesterday, once in the morning, and once when Bernard was speaking last night, and again this morning, I just feel compelled to share one little incident. If you know it, I'll shorten it. There was a person, a man or a woman, it's irrelevant. And he was in an area which was going to be flooded. Flooded, completely flooded. The whole valley was going to be flooded. And it came on the radio, "Leave your house. It's going to rain and it's not going to stop raining until the whole valley, the highest peak of the whole valley is going to be gone." And this lady, or man, was a Christian. And when she heard it on the radio, she said, "Well, my God is going to fulfill my need, so I'm going to stay around." And then it came on the TV. And then somebody phoned her. And the water was rising and rising and rising and rising. And now it's so bad that everybody has left the neighborhood except this lady or man. They're upstairs and the water is still rising. And a boat comes along. A few boats come along with a megaphone and says, "You've got to leave your house. You've got to be saved. You've got to leave where you are and come out or you're going to die. No. My God is going to meet me. I believe that my God will meet me on my terms." A helicopter comes along. At this time, the man, we'll say he's a man, is sitting on the chimney sweep, on the top of the house, on the chimney, trying to keep his toes out of the water. And the people come along and say, "It's your last chance. Please, please come with us." "No, no, I won't. My God will meet my need in my way." And then the guy dies. Drowns after all the warnings. Christian goes to heaven, walks up to the throne of grace and says, God, I have a grievance with you. I believed you to meet my need, and you let me down miserably. And God said, I sent the postman. And I said it on the radio, and on the TV, and the phone call, and the boats, and. But you wouldn't receive what you needed. That has been on my heart for 2 days. I just had to share it. He must go through Samaria. He's passing along us this last few days. He's been passing over and back in front of us. Well, this woman, he's sitting down. He's on a journey, going someplace else, but not preoccupied. Not so busy that he hasn't time for you and I and to meet us in our desperate, desperate need. And this woman is a loose woman. She's had 5 husbands, and the man she's living with now is not her husband. She had a reputation in the town. And this poor woman used to go to the well like everybody else used to go to the well, early in the morning or late in the evening like they do in villages in Thailand. You don't go any place in the midday. Only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. But you see, she had to go out in the midday sun because that was the only time she had a bit of peace. And you know, even though it was midday and it was as bright and as hot as anything, it was pitch blackness in her soul. That poor woman. She had been, like the rose, put on the ground and trampled upon. That was bad enough, but if you know, as I know, our reactions to what happens can be more binding than the initial sin. And here she is, she walks out with her pot. She has done this day in and day out for years. She's a prostitute. She's shunned by man, shunned by women. She has never met a real man, of course. And she's out, and she's sweaty, and she's dirty, and she's quite alone. And then Jesus Christ must come along and sit down close to her. It's not a case of us seeking Christ. None of us seek him. He seeks us. Notice he was there when she arrived. He was waiting, like we heard about the father of the prodigal son. You see, she was a son lost far away. But we're all lost. And she comes along and she starts communicating with Jesus. Notice his tone. Give me a drink. How gracious of him. He's a gentleman. To the degree that I am a gentleman, it is to the degree that I know the gentleman. He's a gentleman. And he's sitting down, and he is weary, but it doesn't inhibit him. He's just sitting down in the heat of the day. His disciples have gone for Makan. They have other priorities. They missed a wonderful opportunity because they were interested in something else, temporal thing. And Jesus is sitting down there, and he looks at this woman. He can see her coming from a distance. He's looking down the little boreen, the little road, and he sees her coming from a distance, and he loves her. She doesn't know it yet. But he loves her, and his heart goes out to her, and he's willing and waiting for her when she arrives at the right time in the right place. Not before time, not too late. He always comes to us like this, just at the right time. She walks up, her head down, her burdens. She's a very thoughtful, intelligent woman. She's musing things over. She arrives at the well and she's going to go through the same rigmarole as she has done every day. But today is going to be different. Jesus is there. Give me a drink. This takes her by surprise because she's a Samaritan woman. Not alone is she a Samaritan woman, which means the Jews would have nothing to do with her or her whole nation. But not alone would the Jews not have anything to do with her. Her own people would have nothing to do with her. She's on her own. Nobody can help her. And he breaks the ice as simply as anything. Would you give me a drink? and she says, "That's unusual. I've never met a man like this before. First of all, he's a Jew and he's a man, and I'm a Samaritan and I'm a woman. No prejudice. Absolutely no prejudice." Now, we have a very short account of what happens here, but it's sufficient to say that she caught something from Jesus. It's sufficient to say that he communicated more to her that's on the written page. He always does. He always communicates to our spirits far more than just the word. "I'm a Samaritan and you're a Jew." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the what of God, the gift," completely consistent with what has been coming through the whole conference. It's a gift. "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." She said to him, "Sir, but you've nothing to draw with, and the well is very deep. If you only knew me, Jesus, if you only knew my history, if you only knew how bruised and broken I am, could I dare trust myself to you?" Yet another man, at least the number 7 in her life. Is it possible? And for some of you in this room, you have to begin there again. You've got to come to him and say, "Can I trust you?" He doesn't presume that you can. He has seen what you've been through. He sees what you're going through. He sees your reaction to what you've gone through and are going through. And he knows you have very little strength. So begin here. I want you out of your rut. Begin where you are. "Is it possible that I can trust you?" That's what she was saying. In not so many words. "I've given up. I've lost hope. I've accepted my circumstances. I am hopeless and helpless. I've accepted the status quo, and this is the way it has been, and this is the way it's going to be." And then she meets Jesus. And he says, "Would you give me a drink? But if you knew who was speaking to you, you'd ask me, and I would give you living waters." "You've nothing to draw with, and the well is so deep. It's so deep. My history, my sin, the shame, the rejection. So deep." She still doesn't know who she's speaking to. And Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water shall thirst again." I was speaking to one person in the conference, a brother. He said he almost didn't come this year, which would indicate he's been here before. He said, "Almost, I almost didn't come. Because I've come and I've been blessed and I've been restored and I've been healed." He didn't say all of these words, but this is what he meant. "For many years. It's happened now for a few years. And I go home and I'm ready to." And then after a few months, and by the time the next conference comes along, "I don't know whether I can put up with it again. I don't know if I can be encouraged to be disappointed again." This is where this woman was. Every day filling her water. She knew it wouldn't fulfill her. She knew it wouldn't sustain her, but it would have to suffice. God is more than that for you and I. It's not a matter of coming to the conference or going to church or having our quiet times. Only. Everyone, no exceptions, Everyone who drinks from this water shall thirst again. But whoever dare to believe, put your name in there. Dare to believe it's you. Whoever, put in your name, Charles, or whatever your name is. Whoever, whatever, whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. Never. Never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up to eternal life. Him. He's the answer. He's the solution. He's the need of the human heart. As Augustine said, God has put in a God-shaped vacuum in all of us that cannot be filled by going to the well of the conference or listening to the tapes or the CDs. The water that I shall give him shall be in him. I will be in him. I will make my abode in him. I will fellowship with him. I will sup with him. I will give him my life. Whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. Never, brother. Never, sister. Never. My testimony by God's grace. Yeah, I think I'm right. For the last 13 years when I got into the boat and he pushed me out into those white rapids, there have been a lots of ups and downs. Some successes, mostly failures. But I've never thirsted. Not once. That's my testimony. It's got to be yours too. Oh yeah, he's molded me and he's refined me and all of these things. That's true. That's obvious. That happens. But as regards famishing with thirst, dying inside, out in the heat of the day, just for a bit of peace because I can't stand being with people. That was her position. And coming and filling her little water pot. Bringing it back and drinking it and drinking it and drinking. The saddest thing of all is she had a good mind. She was a spiritual woman. She knew it wasn't satisfying her. She had one husband. And then she had five. And then she's living with a guy. She had never met a man. She had a father. She had six men, but she had never met a man. I perceive in verse 19, I perceive that you are a prophet. And then she asks a question, and the woman, and Jesus answers her spiritually inclined question. How many of us Christians hide behind super spirituality? I don't need super spirituality when I have a big problem. I need him. And it's one thing about Jesus, he'll always cut to the quick of things. He'll always go right to the point. He won't beat around the bush. In my country, in Thailand, there are masters at beating round the bush. Jesus said to her, woman, he loves women. He just loves them. Woman. Oh, we're getting personal now. Not Samaritan, woman, daughter, come home, come home. I've been waiting for this moment for generations past. Just woman, let's talk, let's communicate, let's connect, as the Americans say. Woman, believe. I know, in my spirit, that there are a number of people amongst us who cannot, they feel, they cannot believe. You can, you know. Belief doesn't begin with you. It's a gift from God. You can believe. Start believing again. You see, Jesus is the kind of shepherd that when he comes to a conference like this, that he ministers to all his sheep, but he's most concerned about the one sheep, not the 99. It's the one sheep he's always after. Look at what we're looking at. Presumably it was a big town. Presumably there were a lot of people. There were at least, well, I don't know how many men were there. But he went after the one sheep. He went through Samaria to get the one person, the one lost lamb, the black sheep. He went straight for her. And he does in our lives, again and again and again. And he does in our churches. If God has done anything in me, it's, I like to go after the one sheep. You've got to have different ministries in the churches. And my natural bent, or supernatural bent, is, you see, I was the one sheep. I was the one like this woman. And then when God meets you, there's something that transpires and he gives you that you have the same kind of heart. Believe me. Please, please, believe him. The hour is coming when neither in this mountain or in Jerusalem shall you worship the Father. Well, I mean, Bernard has ministered the Father to us like I've never heard in my whole life. It's magnificent. Get that CD last night. Get it and listen to it and study it and then give it to others. It's magnificent. To a Chinese congregation. God. God. That was God last night. I couldn't help running up to him afterwards and giving him a big hug. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't not do it. God, Father, heart to his people. That's it. That's it. By the way, you mentioned the other point. What was the other F? Can I share something with you about forgiveness? By the way, we have a little girl in our home. Not hostel, home in Thailand. Her father is an alcoholic. He has wasted their inheritance. When he gets drunk, when she's coming home from school, regularly he's lying on the side of the road in a drunken stupor. He beats her mother, regularly, and she has to flee the house and come to our house, one of our houses. One of her daughters on staff. And on one occasion, he took a saucepan. It's hard to translate it into English, but it's either a saucepan or a frying pan. And he took it and whacked her across the face with it. Boom! Now, you can imagine how she behaves in our home. She's not the perfect child. She's only 12. And she was being this, that, and the other. And we sat down and we spoke with her. I knew her history very well. I've loved that child since she was 9. I've wanted her to come and live with us since she was 9. And she's with us now. And we sat down with her on the floor, as her habit up there. And I asked her to speak about these things. Very, very unusual for her. She did. Now, her mother goes to the market in the morning at 2:30 in the morning and sells a few weeds, you'd call them here in this country, because we eat well in this country. And she goes at 2:30 in the morning and she comes home at around 5 in the morning. And the husband is there more often than not. And he goes away and he drinks the money. Forgiveness. We're sitting down speaking with the little lady and I felt the Lord prompting me to ask her, daughter, because that's what she is, daughter, who do you find it hardest to forgive? Your dad who has done all of that and more? Or your mother who works very hard, has never done anything like that. She goes to the market, but she's tired and she's weary and she scolds you and she sows into your spirit hard words. Who do you find it hardest to forgive? Who did she answer? Dad or mum? Mum! Be careful of your words. I'm learning it slowly. Would to God I had learned it years ago with my own kids. Be careful of your words. They're more deadly than a frying pan. Now, she's all, the behavior is not good, and we're sitting down, and I say, daughter, God wants to help you. If he could help you, would you? Yes, Dad, I would like that. And all of a sudden, God gives me a picture, a vision. She's in a prison cell, with bars all around her. And Jesus is outside the prison door. And he has his hand outstretched like this. And she's in the cell and it's locked. Jesus doesn't have the key to let her out. And all of a sudden, in my mind's eye or in my spirit, I see in her cell a key up on her right-hand side. The key to let her out of her prison. What was the key? Forgiveness. And I said, daughter, this is what God is saying to you. She's just a barely little Christian, just born again a little while ago. Beautiful child. I say, now, daughter, you have a choice to make. You can stay in the prison, but God has revealed to me that the key for your salvation, for your getting out, freedom, is in your own cell. Jesus can't let you out. What you've got to do is reach for the key, put it into his hand, because you cannot use the key from the inside. But if you hand it into Jesus' hand, and he's smiling at you, and his hand is ready, 99% grace, 1% cooperation. He let you out. The little child did. Out she went. Think about these things. Some of you feel you cannot believe and you cannot forgive. Can I tell you the truth with all the love I can muster? It's more like you won't believe and you certainly won't forgive. Get the tape. Get the CD. Study it. Freedom. The child was set free. Smiled for the first time in a good while. The woman said to him in verse 25, now I know that the Messiah is coming. Notice the tense, future tense. I know there's a Savior, but it's in the future. I know there's a solution to my problem, but it's the next conference. I know that there's hope, but it's tomorrow. God never said, I will be what I will be. I am is here. I am what I am will give you the faith and the belief and the ability. But you've got to work with them. Do your little bit. And you come out of your prison. I've come out of mine by the grace of God. Well, the Messiah is coming. He was called Christ. Now, when he comes, he will declare all things to us. And Jesus, right on the button, I who speak to you am he. Oh, a personal audience with the Son of God. In the heat of the day, in the most unlikely circumstances, in the most unlikely place, with nobody around, she's face to face with God. Jesus, the fullness of the Godhead bodily, sitting this close to her. She doesn't turn his back on him. She doesn't rationalize it away by religion or prejudice or. This was her opportunity. Blind Bartimaeus, blind, beggar, dirty, downtrodden, by the side of the road. He wasn't even on the road. He was at the side of it. That was where he used to sit. Then he heard a sound. Have you heard the sound this last 3 days? Don't leave the same. I beg you, on behalf of Christ, don't leave the same. He's blind. Who's passing? Oh, well, Jesus is, but you don't need to be concerned. He's far too busy for you. After all the important people are close to him. Who's passing? Jesus. And he gets beside himself. He makes a disgrace of himself. It was totally an uncultural thing to do. And he shouts at the top of his voice from here, Jesus, son of Nazareth, have mercy on me. Would you stop? Would you stop? You're making a nuisance of yourself. But he had his opportunity. He had waited long enough. Have you waited long enough? Have you waited long enough? Have you gone round this mountain long enough? Is there a desperation, not a fleshly, carnal desperation, but a desperation inspired by the Spirit of God? That's where he was. He wasn't going to take no for an answer. And he stood up and flung away his cloak and started running after Jesus. But he's blind. It doesn't matter. I'll find him. But you see, Jesus could see. He was safe. Jesus could see. Bring him to me. What do you want? Brother and sister, what do you want this morning? We all can go round the mountain once more. We'll be back here next year. If I'm asked back, we'll be back. We can do another year. God won't despise us for that. As we break bread this morning, what do you want? And then I will give you water. What does it say in John 7? He who believes in me, from his innermost being shall flow rivers of living water. Sufficient, more than sufficient, rivers of living water. From where? Not the throne of grace anymore, but in the spirit of the man or the woman. He's there. Godhead is there. The grace is there. It's a well springing up. And you never thirst. Well, how does she react? She flings her water pot to the side. Runs into the village. Remember, it's the middle of the day. She's beside herself. She runs into the village and sees all the people and says, I met a man. At last, I met a man. I met the man. Dad wasn't. Well, the husbands weren't. My lover or partner isn't. The guy in the synagogue isn't. I met a man. Come and see. Something about the reality of what she said, was irresistible to the people. Can you imagine a prostitute going back into the town to the important people and the religious people and somehow saying something that could move them? Impossible. That's why you and I, the one thing that you and I have got is our testimony, living testimony. So that when you speak, there's power. When you speak, there's something about it that rings true. And those cynics in that village, their cynicism was overcome by her testimony. It was real. It was spirit-breathed. It was full of fire. Dare I say passion in the pure sense of the word. And the cynics had to go and see. Testimony. What's your testimony? What you are and what I am speaks so loudly that people who live around us can't hear a word we say. Unless we know this river, this spring, this fountain welling up. Of course it cleanses. Of course it restores. Of course it refreshes. But far more than that, it's not. It's a lifestyle. No, it's more than that. It's a relationship with Him. 11 o'clock, we're going to break bread. What has God said to you, if anything? That's what you do. He's not the Messiah that's coming. He's the Messiah of now. He's not the Emmanuel who's going to come or has come. He's the Emmanuel of now. Has God kindled up in you a holy desire, a passion, like Bartimaeus had? I'm going to get him. I'm going to see him. I'm going to speak to him. I'm going to share my burden with him. I'll be okay then. Not tomorrow. I can't wait. This isn't a carnal, fleshly thing, folks. You understand that. It's God inspired. Now, as we break bread, I have to confess I love my brother's ministry, and I love it when he leads the breaking of bread. But as we do, he'll instruct us. Father, through our Father here, and respond finally. Can I speak to the one sheep, not the 99 now, to the one who you barely dare to believe that things can be different? It can. And you who feel, well, I've lost all face before God, all credibility, that's okay. You see, he goes back beyond, before that. Before you ever sinned, he loved you. Before you were ever born, he loved you. He loved you for eternity. If you can't be safe with him, who can you be safe with?